Seeking mental health care can be overwhelming and even scary, but it doesn't have to be. I'm Dr. Josephine McNary, and I'm committed to making this process easier for you. Each week, my expert guest and I unravel a different form of therapeutic intervention in order to bring comfort and understanding and to help you get back to your true self. Hello, and welcome to another episode of My Stories. Today, I'm pleased to have on as our guest, Rebecca Doppelt. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist in private practice who focuses on trauma and anxiety. She received her master's in clinical psychology at Antioch University with a focus on trauma. She studied various approaches to relational trauma and grief in an effort to create a new integrative approach to intimate safety-related wounds. Rebecca utilizes EMDR with both couples and individuals to address complex and single-incident trauma. Somatic approaches are her preferred method for aiding clients with regulation issues. She has a virtual and in-person practice with a diverse group of associates, all of whom are strength-based and relational. Both in and outside of session, she utilizes humor and a wellspring of knowledge about sci-fi and fantasy to connect with others. Today, we talk about betrayal and her approach to treating clients healing from betrayal. Welcome, Rebecca. Today, we talk about a topic that you are an expert in, which is betrayal.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on. So I'd love to just jump into this because it's such a meaty topic. In terms of thinking about betrayal, maybe the best place to start is to talk about what betrayal is. How do we define that?
Yes. So there are many definitions of betrayal. Most people, when they hear the word, they assume that we're talking about infidelity. However, the definition that I use is that betrayal occurs anytime we believe a relationship is safe and then we find out that it is not. So we have family relationships, romantic relationships, friends, roommates, bosses, institutions, where there's an implicit or explicit contract assuming safety, and then we find out that we are in fact unsafe, that is when we have been betrayed. So when I talk about betrayal, it can mean any version of that.
And the perpetrator can be an individual or an institution.
Yes, correct.
Or anywhere in between.
Yes. And in many instances, there can be multiple betrayers that piggyback on each other. So if you go to a doctor and you're seeing a surgeon and the surgeon makes a mistake, that's one betrayal. And then the whole hospital can back them up. And that's another betrayal. Or you go to the court system and lose your case. And then that's failed you. And there's another betrayal. So there can be so many different versions of it even attached to one incident.
And I also wonder what one individual might perceive as a betrayal, another individual may not.
Yes, that's correct. There are definitely instances where, just like with any traumatic incident, where some people can feel really impacted, overwhelmed, betrayed, or transgressed by a specific incident, and somebody else, whether it's because of resilience or avoidance or just their own history, may experience it completely differently.
And it also makes me think about when somebody who has had the experience of being betrayed, that they try to seek support, and maybe some people may not be able to provide that support, talking about, why can't you just get over it? I don't understand why this is such a big deal.
Yes. I mean, one of the things that always comes up when we do betrayal work is that betrayal has this really pernicious way of seeping into all domains of life. So if you go with a classic example about infidelity, if a person's spouse cheats on them, that person may seek out the comfort of friends or family or clergy or colleagues, whatever that may be, for support. And if they're met with, why don't you just get over it? Or why don't you just leave that person? Or you brought this on yourself. Any version of that is additional betrayal, is a lack of support. And so you end up with discomfort or problematic relationships in all domains of life. And this is how we end up with our sleep impacted, our appetites impacted, our ability to show up and perform at work. All of the different domains of life end up with some sort of impact when we've had a betrayal, even if we aren't clear in the moment that that's what's happening.
So sometimes when we think about betrayal, we hear the phrase, the primal wound. Can you maybe describe to us what that is?
Yes. So when we are born, the first thing that we learn, according to Erikson's stage of development, when we are a brand new baby, meaning under 2 years old, the very first developmental task that we have is learning trust versus mistrust. So a baby is born, they're hungry or they're cold or they need their diaper changed, they cry, caregiver comes in a timely fashion, consistently comes every time there's crying and meets the baby's needs. And so prior to learning language, prior to learning how to feed themselves or walk, the first thing we as human beings learn is my world safe? Can I trust the people around me who are supposed to keep me safe? If your caregivers consistently show up in a timely fashion, we learn that our world is safe and that we can trust others. If we are inconsistently met, or they don't come at all, or we, you know, experience yelling or being shamed for crying because we're hungry as infants, we actually learn, again, pre-verbally, that our world is unsafe and we cannot trust others. So when we are adults, if we are betrayed, whether, again, it's infidelity or a roommate who steals our money or whatever the case may be, what we find is that people report feeling very young, that they regress to sometimes an infantile state. And they feel like crying children trying to get their needs met, where we feel like we're that child in the crib crying to have our caregiver come and take care of us. And so betrayal is not something we can, quote unquote, just get over or just move past very easily, because it is transgressing on our very first stage of development. It is the primal wound, because it is violating the very first thing we learn as human beings, which is my world safe?
I also wonder, though, thinking about someone with a history of like the primal wound of having caregivers that aren't as consistent, that throughout their life, because they have more of a sensitivity towards this, they have a lower bar for kind of interpreting something as a betrayal.
Yes, we do see that people who have a history of attachment wounds, relational betrayal, especially people who have neglect or childhood abuse, their calibration for what is safe or unsafe is a little off. And so we as clinicians, part of that work is helping a client recalibrate their sense of safety. But just in general, we end up seeing people who have what we call repetition compulsion, which is when you end up in the same relationship over and over. Or somebody who marries their mom or marries their dad because they are on a very unconscious level trying to fix something that didn't work before. So they get into the same relationship over and over, however dysfunctional that may be, because they are trying to do it right this time. They're trying to fix it. And that's when we see people with histories of betrayal after betrayal, because they don't know how to do things differently. They need to recalibrate their sense of safety. They need to find a new way of picking relationships, picking people. But because they're calibrated towards betrayal, they seek it out for familiarity's sake. And then you end up in that repetition compulsion where they're just having the same thing happen over and over in different ways.
That actually brings up the other question and direction I want to go in, is talking about what is the work. So what is the work that you do to kind of break those cycles and to allow someone's course to shift?
Yes. In order for somebody to really break that cycle, I mean, first and foremost, you have to create safety. If they are living with their betrayer, for example, if you have somebody who was, let's say, abused by a parent and they're still living with that parent, instances like that, you can't do any work. You can't recalibrate for safety if they're living in an unsafe situation. So first and foremost, you have to establish safety, whether that's emotional, physical, financial, whatever the case may be. Once somebody is safe and the clinician is confident that they're safe, then you have to do a blended approach of treating that trauma, going in and looking at classic PTSD symptoms, helping them learn to trust themselves, helping them learn what it feels like to be in a peaceful state or what it means to have safety. A lot of people with early wounds don't know what safety feels like. It might feel boring or it might feel stagnant. And so you have to help them sit in that. But you also have to really make space for that grief work. They might have to grieve the parent that they have or the childhood that they have, or they may have to grieve the relationship that they believed they had, or that they don't trust themselves anymore. How did I get myself into this situation? They have to relearn to trust themselves. And then they have to grieve who they were. They have to grieve the identity they used to have. And so if you leave out the grief piece, or you just go with grief, leave out the trauma piece, you're really going to be missing something. So you have to take that integrative approach to get someone to ultimately form a new identity with healthy boundaries and a healthy calibration towards safety and a new way of entering the world without forgetting where they've come from. Otherwise, you'll end up again with that repetition compulsion, but new version of self moving forward.
Hmm. So I'm wondering, the approach that you use with your clients, how is that different than other models that are out there for treating betrayal?
Yes. So there are many models out there for treating betrayal. Some of them take a very straight up PTSD trauma focused approach, which is just about focusing on the symptoms of trauma. And this is fine for some people, that seems to work. However, that does leave out that grief piece, which is all about worldview and identity. I mean, trauma, no matter what version it is, impacts your worldview. That's why it seeps into all domains of life. So if you're only treating PTSD symptoms, you might just be treating somebody who's jumpy or somebody who has the mood related issues or they're having nightmares and things like that. And you're going to miss the entire worldview piece. And so I sort of reject the straight up trauma approach. There are many approaches that take, especially when it comes to infidelity, if they're treating somebody who has a partner who's betrayed them, or partners of sex addicts, for example, where they take a stance of, oh, there must be something wrong with you. You are codependent because you missed the signs, or you are seeking out people who mistreat you. So let's talk about what that's about. And that's very pathologizing. And that also, again, misses this whole mark about investment in self, calibration towards safety that can be a betrayal by the clinician. And so I tend to take a very strength-based approach that is looking at, okay, you have trauma symptoms, you probably have attachment-related symptoms, and we really need to grieve this old worldview and this old identity and move towards a new way.
Okay. Something that comes up a lot in clinical work is this discussion about forgiveness. I'm also wondering how you work with clients around that topic.
Yeah. I always impress upon my clients that forgiveness is optional. It is not imperative for healing. We can absolutely adjust our worldview and invest in our new identity and move forward with safety calibration without forgiving, if that is our choice. When we want to forgive, if we choose to forgive, it doesn't mean that our perpetrator gets a pass. It doesn't mean that what they did was okay. It doesn't mean that we are going to forget, that whole forgive and forget thing. I reject that entirely. When we want to forgive, what it simply means is that we are no longer carrying the distress. We don't want to carry the anger. We don't want to carry the discomfort in our bodies, our nervous systems full of that kind of energy. When we choose to let that go, that is what forgiveness means. And so the people who want to carry that for whatever reason, whether that's part of, you know, the identity they want to carry forward or because they don't feel ready to forgive, no judgment, that is their choice. And when we do choose to forgive, whether we tell our perpetrator that we're forgiving them or not, also optional. When it's an instance of spouses and an infidelity, if they're choosing to stay together, sometimes this becomes a little bit more important in terms of that forgiveness piece and moving forward as a couple that wants to stay united versus somebody who is processing the betrayal, for example, of a parent who was abusive. They may never want to tell that parent that they forgive them. They may not want to forgive them, and that's also okay.
So I get the sense as a clinician, you're never going to encourage someone to forgive versus not forgive. It's really an individualized decision that you really help the individual explore those two options. You would never make a recommendation.
The only time I make a recommendation is when it's about forgiving oneself, especially when a client comes in with, this is my fault. I should have seen the signs. Why didn't I seek safety sooner? I am so smart and capable. How did I get myself into this situation? We have to obviously challenge a victim blaming stance always. And when somebody does want to look at their role, whether it is a matter of, you know, a spouse who unknowingly colluded with something, if there are instances like that, then we do need to help somebody forgive themselves for the role that they played. That's also case by case. That is very specific. And so when there is a self-forgiveness piece, I will always bring that up because otherwise we tend to just self-blame and we get ourselves stuck. But forgiveness of others in a betrayal, totally optional.
Got it. Okay. Another thing that came to my mind as we're talking about betrayal, we're talking about victims of betrayal. What about perpetrators? Do you ever work with perpetrators of betrayal?
Yes. So working with perpetrators, very similar, although there are some specific, unique things to working with perpetrators. When you're working with a couple and it is an infidelity related thing, if the couple is choosing to move forward, there has to be a piece where the person who did the betraying has to really be willing to be honest and vulnerable about why this happened in the first place. What was coming up? Did they have an unmet need that we need to make sure they get met now so that they can move forward? They have to be willing to take responsibility for their actions. They have to be willing to sit with their partner's distress. You know, a lot of times in couples, we see the person who's done the betraying has such a hard time tolerating the distress that's caused from the betrayal that they just want their partner to heal and move on. Well, I apologized and I want to just move forward. Why can't they put this behind them? Because they have a hard time tolerating the pain that they see in their partner. In those instances, we have to really help somebody increase their tolerance for somebody else's distress and then work through what was going on for you. What is the unmet need? Is there something that we can adjust so that this can be healthy and supportive moving forward? When you're working with an individual, if I have just a one-on-one client, whether they are a domestic violence perpetrator or they are, you know, a sexual assault perpetrator or they are somebody who stepped out on their marriage, these are all instances where we have to make it safe for that person to look at themselves and understand what led them to their actions to help them, again, build up the tolerance to face the distress that they've caused in others, to really look at what is the consequence of their action. Does this mean that their marriage is over? Does this mean their child will never speak to them again? Does this mean that they've lost their job? Whatever the specificity is of their situation, they can get defensive when someone has to look at the consequences of their actions. They may have a shame response. They may have defensiveness. They may want to avoid or numb out. All of these are just ways to avoid feeling the pain. So we have to help them feel safe, sitting in the discomfort, to feel all of their feelings to their fullest extent. Once they can feel all of their feelings, they can move forward and find a way to move through the world from a new place with a new worldview, or they will perpetrate again in some form.
I think it actually was important to talk about kind of the other side of it, how you work with both sides of betrayal, right?
Mm-hmm.
It brings me to a closing question I have, which is, as a clinician, what your goal is for somebody in terms of working with them through this betrayal, the after effects of the betrayal, and what are you trying to achieve through therapy?
My goal is always to support the client's goals. If they want to forgive, that's part of my goal. If they just want to not have the same relationship over and over, then that is my goal. I think ultimately, underneath all of that is the goal of a client not holding all of their distress in their nervous system, not repeating the same mistakes that they've already made, setting new boundaries and being able to be authentic with themselves and have a healthier, more integrative worldview to accept their mistakes or accept that mistakes happen around them or to let go of anything that they're carrying, like an old worldview around safety, so that it can be calibrated in the new way, ultimately so that they can feel grounded and authentic and move through the rest of their life with as little distress in their nervous system as possible.
Before we were recording, I was talking about how this is a really complex topic to talk about. And I'm very impressed that we did this in 20 minutes, talking about a very, very difficult, complex topic in terms of thinking about therapeutic interventions and treatment. So thank you. You clearly are an expert at it, because I was like, how are we going to talk about all of this? And I will for sure make sure the listener has information about you and the work you do so that they can learn a bit more about you. Before we go, any last words that you want to leave the listener with?
You don't have to suffer alone. You don't have to just get over it. You don't have to carry this with you for the rest of your life. This doesn't mean that you can't have healthy relationships or that nobody can be trusted. There are people who can help you. I encourage anybody, whether you are the betrayer or the betrayed, to get help so that you can move forward in a way that is the least distressing as possible.
Well, I think that's a good place to leave it.
Yeah. Is there any chance that I can make one more plug for getting help?
Yes, please.
Through EMDR and this and similar modalities like flash technique, for example, there are ways to treat traumatic wounds where a client does not have to say out loud whatever has happened to them. And I think that's really critical, particularly with early childhood betrayals, if it's at the hands of a parent or a sibling, and especially anybody who is the betrayer, if they are having a hard time facing what it is that they have done, even in themselves, if they have so much shame that they don't want to speak it out loud, there is a way to move towards healing, whether it's self-forgiveness or letting go or becoming a more integrated person. There are approaches that allow you to do that without ever having to give voice to whatever your secret is. And so if somebody doesn't seek treatment because they don't want to admit what has happened to them or what they have done, they can still seek treatment and still get the relief they're looking for. And they don't ever have to give voice to whatever your secret is.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that. I found this really helpful, and I'm sure the listener will as well. So thank you for being on.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
Take care.
Thanks, you too.
This has been Mind Stories with me, Josephine McNary of Cal Psychiatry. With online psychiatry in California and 13 offices throughout Southern California and the Bay Area, Cal Psychiatry specializes in medication management, ADHD, anxiety disorders, alternative therapies, women's mental health, and more. Visit us at calpsychiatry.com and let us help you get back to your true self. Thanks for listening to Mind Stories, and don't forget to subscribe.